Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the evolution of spirit and the spiritual traditions that are so much a part of this time. And especially tonight, we're going to pay tribute to someone I think who is the founder of so much interspiritual dialogue, Lex Hickson. Lex Hickson inspired me by listening to his radio program. He had a program on WBAI from 1971 to 1984, which was called In the Spirit. And In the Spirit was an amazing education in spirituality for me, because it encompassed so many of the leaders that are so well known today in this emerging spiritual culture. So based on that radio show, there was a book that's just been produced called Conversations in the Spirit by one of the guests tonight, Paul Cohen of Monkfish. And also joining us on the call is Lex Hickson's wife, Sheila Hickson, who was there when all of this happened, all this unfoldment of the Great Spirit. And let me just give you a list of some of the amazing teachers that were on In the Spirit, which people like Allen Ginsberg and Alan Watts and Bob Thurman and Krishnamurti and David Spangler and Guru Bawa, who was an amazing being from all the pictures. And anyway, so many. So let's just jump into this conversation, because I just want to say Lex was, as I said, inspirational in my spiritual education, not just because of the way he, the people he talked to, but the way he would be with his guests. They were his conversations weren't going for sound bites, but they were going for deep understanding of these great traditions. So, Sheila, thank you for being here. And Paul, thank you for publishing the book of Conversation.
Thank you for inviting us, Alan.
Of course, this is very exciting to me, because it's a way for me to feel connected to In the Spirit. So let me talk to you, Sheila, first, and find out what was Lex like in a way. I mean, he just didn't dabble in these religions. He jumped full head into these different traditions that he was studying. Can you talk a little bit about what that was like and some of the traditions both of you were involved in?
Well, I think I'm just thinking now that you asked me that question, and remembering that his undergraduate work was done in philosophy.
Mm, yes.
So he was a real philosopher, and he wanted to know what was behind the thinking of the great religious traditions. And he wanted to know how they were built and how they worked. And he realized that to do that, he had to enter into them fully. Mm. And so he had this amazing ability of totally immersing himself in a tradition, sort of taking on the language of it, taking on the practices, taking on the deep understandings that it gave, and really living it. And I think that was his way to get inside and really see how it was, how the truth was found there. And when he was an undergraduate, I remember he told me that his favorite book was My Experiments with Truth, Gandhi.
Oh.
And
wow.
I've always thought that's really what he was doing. my experiments with truth?
Well, he was so much a truth seeker. I mean, he was a true mystic, I would say, in the way he went about. It wasn't an intellectual thing, although he was probably a great intellect. It was a full embodiment of Islam or Christianity or Buddhism or Hinduism in the form of Ramakrishna. Was he different in each of these different modalities, or was he essentially the same? Because I don't know how you can go into all of those and be the same or different. I'm just curious how you saw that from your perspective.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. Funny stories, like when we first encountered Zen Buddhism, mm-hmm. he saw people sitting. We went to the Zendo in New York, the Zen Studies Society, and he saw people sitting in full lotus. And he was a very tall man, and he had these very long legs, and there was no way he could get into this position. But we came home, and he said, I'm determined. I'm going to learn to sit in full lotus position. And so he would take hot baths, get his muscles all kind of limbered up, and then he would bend his legs and pull them up and try to get in position. And he absolutely, within I don't know how many months it took him, but he got into that position. And it's sort of an indication, you know, of how on the physical level what he was doing with his own thinking. He just determined that he was going to see the world in this certain way. So it wasn't really something that was reflected that much in his behavior, although he did a lot of sitting when he was studying Vedanta. He would do long meditations, and when he was studying Islam, he would do the 5 times a day prayer and like that. But he was a very humorous, funny, smart person, and he maintained that.
It's like a multifaceted crystal with all these different sides to him. I mean, yeah. That's the, I guess.
So interesting. I mean, I think sometimes it wasn't so easy either. I mean, he would immerse himself in a tradition and just be in love with it, in love with the practice. What a wonderful practice this is. Look how deep it is. And then to have to turn around and do something that was not at odds, but just in a totally different modality. He did have trouble that way.
Well, that's the part that's so interesting. And I'll get to you too in a second, Paul, but I just want to just see how, you know, was he able to integrate all these traditions, or were they sort of separate paths for him, or were they all his path in a way? Do you know? What I do, I borrow from different traditions, but it's all my path. But what was it like for Lex and you, for that matter? Yeah.
Well, he had a very specific way of looking at it. He felt that each tradition had a completeness in itself, and that when he practiced Buddhism, it was 100% Buddhism. And he even had a kind of image that you close the door between the traditions to keep their their particularity. So he didn't combine them.
Uh-huh. I guess that's how he could go in so deeply into each one, I would imagine, you know? You have to shut the door because each tradition is so complete.
Yeah. And wow. And if you're in it, if you mean to be in it completely, then you don't, you're not doing something else on the side.
Right. Yes. But
he had some funny, we did have some funny experiences. Once we were at one of our Buddhist teacher's place, and there was a little lake there. And Lex wanted to keep his Hindu meditation going. So he said, I think maybe if I go in a boat out in the middle of the pond, the little lake, and do my meditation out there, it won't disturb the Buddhist situation. So he went out, and he was floating around in the middle of a lake, and a big beaver came right up next to the boat and just slapped its tail down really in a very, very loud sound. And he said he just jumped, and he thought, okay, that's my message. I'm not going to do any more of my Hindu meditation in my Buddhist teacher's lake.
Well, right. That is funny. But was he able to go back? What was his process? Did he like do something for a while, like the Buddhist meditation, and then end it, or would he then go back to it in cycles? What was that process, or was it complete once he did it?
Yeah, it was kind of cycles. I mean, there were certain things like Ramadan would be an intensive Sufi practice. And then Kali Puja, he would do a really intense Kali Puja, like that. And then if he were working on a manuscript, then he would be immersed in that. While he was working on the manuscripts, he would be immersed in that particular tradition.
Would his personality change according to, or was it always him, pretty much, Lex?
It was always him, and yeah, it was always him. And we have three children, so there were always kids around, and it was a busy household. So yeah, he was himself.
Were you brought into these different practices too? How was your position in these different spiritual practices?
Some of them I couldn't, because I was a really stay-at-home full-time mother, so I couldn't do everything. But I followed it as much as I could, and the one I got, I guess the one I got most involved in was Buddhism. Uh-huh. Because I went on, after Lex died, I went on and studied with the same teacher he studied with and became a teacher in the Buddhist, in the Zen tradition.
That was Bernie Glassman, right?
Yes, right.
I see. And Bernie's still around. You're still in that tradition in a way, huh?
Yes.
But one more question before I get to Paul. Were all these, you know, some people say all paths lead to the same place, but then again, each tradition is unique unto itself. What do you think Lex discovered? Did they all go ultimately to the same place, or are they all different destinations?
Oh, definitely the same place.
Uh-huh.
That wonderful Vedantic truth is one. We see it variously.
Yeah. Well, no, I think that's that answers some questions for me, for sure. That Vedanta place is that it's all the oneness, right?
Yeah,
it's all And that, it just
that
manifests.
really answers a lot of questions. If you go into that place, then all the differences disappear. How he was able to do it. That was his understanding. And the one of the final writings that he did, he called The Open Space Beyond Religion.
Uh-huh.
So that's sort of the non-dual field.
Is that where he sort of got to at the end, would you say? That place?
Well, I would say that he maintained a balance between those two things. Because you can't live in a non-dual field. I mean,
right.
You're a body. You're a personality. So you have to function. But with that balance of that knowledge.
And it feels like you've sort of gotten there as well, as, you know, an inheritor of that knowledge too. You feel
well,
that?
I did hang around him for a pretty long time, so I guess something came through.
Well, let's talk about the process of the book, you know, because he has all these amazing interviews with these world famous leaders, and listening to them, they are timeless. So Paul, I'm talking to Paul Cohen also, who's the publisher of Monkfish, who just published this book of Lex Hickson's interviews. Paul, how did the whole book come together, and what was your relationship to Lex?
Well, you know, I really came of age spiritually in the 1970s. And so, you know, my first year in college at the State University, I was just suddenly exposed to all of these Eastern traditions coming over the transom, as it were. And at the same time, you know, it was the psychedelic revolution, and Ram Dass's book, Be Here Now, had just come out. And the thing that struck me so much at that time was this tremendous profusion of spirituality. And on the surface, everybody's saying something is a little different. You know, how does this all fit together? It was a kind of exciting intellectual quest for me to come to grips with that, and to somehow find a way to embrace all of this and not fall into a situation, well, it's this, but it's not that. And Lex's very being, you know, embodied that right from the start. And also, you know, right around that time, I found the book, The Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, which played such a prominent part in Lex's life. There's a chapter, in fact, the first chapter in the book is Lex talking about Ramakrishna. Ramakrishna was this Hindu sage who decided to prove to himself that all the religions, in fact, did end up in the same place. So he progressively undertook spiritual practices in different religions to prove to himself that, in fact, they all ended up in the same place. And that seems so important to me, because if they all ended up in different places, that, you know, as a species, we're kind of screwed.
Right.
And so, So Lex was a very early spiritual hero to me. And, you know, he died so young. I got involved in publishing. It was already towards the end of Lex's life. So I thought that there might be this 10th book floating around in the ethers of Lex, which was this compilation of his years on In the Spirit. Then I got in touch with Sheila, and that's kind of how the book began.
Right. So the book are 33 of his interviews from WBAI, or is that it transcribed?
That's right. And not just transcribed, but edited down, because, you know, some of those interviews were very, you know, where they were 2 hours long. And so, and we didn't want the book to to compete with the audio. We wanted the book to complement the audio. So the reading of the interviews, in a sense, is very different than listening to them, but both are available. If you go to lexhickson.com, you can hear the full original interviews in their audio form, whereas the book are these edited, condensed versions of it. So the two related but very different experiences.
Well, I have to say the interviews written or listening to, they are timeless. I've just listened to a bunch of them, and they all are very contemporary. They feel fresh, his talk of about Ramakrishna or I just was listening to the Eileen and Peter Caddy interview. So, Sheila, what was Lex's process in these interviews? Did he ever talk about them to you? Did he ever say, "Oh my God, this is a great interview"? What did do you remember any of that kind of dialogue with him?
I do remember that he always prepared very, very completely. He mm-hmm. always. If the person was giving some sort of initiation or lecture, he would always go and hear it. He would read their books. He really knew what he was talking about when he got in there with the person. Mm. And what? So I saw that part of the process. I never went to the radio station. I always listened at home with the kids.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah. And I when I was working on editing them, I could remember them. I remembered a lot of the programs, hearing them.
Was there any he was particularly excited about? Did he ever say, "Oh my God, I'm interviewing this person"? Or
His by far the Mother Teresa.
Uh-huh.
Saint Teresa, now we say, right?
Right. He was really impressed with her. Is that
no? What? He was just so excited that he had the opportunity to meet her. He was so thrilled, mm-hmm. and it was a very short interview. She was in New York. She was so busy, and he went over to the monastery in the South Bronx where she was and asked her some questions, and it was. You can kind of imagine what she would say. I mean, she always said more or less the same thing, but just to have her voice is so thrilling. And part of the story of this book, the wonderful thing was that Paul came to ask me about it about 12 years ago. And mm-hmm. I wasn't really ready to do it. And I also thought, it was... These aren't meant just to be in print. It's so important to hear the voice because there's spiritual transmission in the sound of those voices.
Yes.
And those need to be heard. So I finally, a friend of mine said, I had these tapes, and the friend said, you really should put that into a digital archive. So the archive had just been finished. Paul came back and asked me again and said, have you changed your mind about this? And then I realized, okay, this is great. Now we can hear, people can hear the program and they can read it. So, to hear Mother Teresa, just to say Mother Teresa's voice is so beautiful.
Well, maybe I could play that, and I don't know if it's going to come through from my computer onto this, but let me see if I can just... Can you hear this?
The few years of a human life with us, going about doing good, and continually stressing that one point, that we are one, that we are His, that we belong to His Father, that His Father has made us for Himself. Continually kept on saying, love one another as I have loved you.
Can you hear that?
Oh, that's beautiful, isn't it?
It's gorgeous.
I'll play a little more. This is Lex Hickson talking to Mother Teresa. So it's a little more
Teresa.
Here.
Saint Teresa.
Saint Teresa. I have loved you. And we know how you loved us, dying on the cross. And from the cross, you and I stand and look at each other. And we wonder, do we really love as he has loved us? Thousands and thousands of people today are hungry and naked and homeless. They are our brothers and sisters. They belong to the same family, to the same loving God, to make us realize Christ has said, and Christ cannot deceive. I was hungry, and you gave me to eat. And I was sick and in prison, and you visited me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was homeless, and you took me in. He made himself the poorest of the poor, so that at the hour of death, he may be able to tell us, to tell you, to tell me, come, you blessed of my Father. Because when I was hungry, you gave me to eat, not only bread, but I was hungry for love, to be wanted, to be known, to be somebody to somebody. I was naked and you clothed me, not only with a piece of cloth, but with that human dignity. And I was homeless and you took me in, not only in that little room made of stones, but in your heart, covered me with that understanding love. You took me as your brother, your sister, you did it to me. How wonderful is the greatness of Christ's love for each one of us. Let us today, when we have gathered to prove to the whole world that we are one, let us be one in this love to the poorest of the poor in the world, that we recognize him in them, that they are our brothers and sisters. Do we know where they are? Do we know what it is to be hungry? Do we know what it is to be lonely, to be unwanted, to be uncared, to be helpless, to have forgotten what it is to smile, who have forgotten what is that human touch? Do we know? Do we know our poor here in the United States? Do we know our poor in our own home? The lonely ones, the unwanted ones. Do we know that that child, the unborn child, is the unwanted one? That I, the poorest of the poor, I don't want that child. How terrible it is to think that our little brothers and sisters, created by the same loving hand of God, are unwanted, unloved. And this is the greatest poverty.
Yeah, that's Mother Teresa. I didn't know she was such a great speaker until I heard this interview.
That was her delivery of her speech at the UN. The day before Lex interviewed her, she gave a big speech at the UN's 30th anniversary celebration.
Oh, I see.
So because his interview was so short, he put that in to round out the program.
Oh, but she is a great speaker.
Voice is lovely, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I had no idea it had such power and resonance in it, you know?
Yeah.
I wanted the audience to hear a little bit of Lex, too, just how he he sounded. Here is the opening of his interview with Bernie Glassman. Let me see right here. If this is Lex from his program In the Spirit.
You're listening to In the Spirit, and this is WBAI in New York.
Oh. Well, he usually has a little music, but I wanted to get into.
We think that we've studied so much that anger is completely gone, and something happens and we get angry. Eventually, we're led to that place where there's nowhere to go. And the reason there's nowhere to go is that all of this has been based on our concepts, our thinking. Once we get to that impasse, then we can make a break to realizing what this is, independent of the mind, independent of the functioning of the brain. Getting to that place is very important. And our getting to that place is not important just for us, but important for everyone. And so when I feel that, I just naturally say thank you.
When you said thank you to this particular statement, I've got the impression that you weren't just thanking this person for being in an impasse, because this person who said this seems to be kind of an advanced.
Hello? Hello?
Hello?
You're listening to In the Spirit.
Oh, sorry. Anyway, that was Lex talking to Bernie Glassman. All these interviews that I'm choosing here are on the lexhickson.com website /conversations in the spirit. Was there one particular interview that really touched you, Paul, when you were putting together this book?
Well, I really appreciated the Ram Dass interview. Ram Dass came on, at least the way it plays out in the book, and he just kind of commandeered the show. He launched right into this fundraising effort for WBAI, which was kind of humorous. But also, he addressed the audience in a very direct way, and it's really reminiscent of the times. You know, he talked about if you're listening from your, Volkswagen minibus. Sort of went on from there.
Right. I mean, WBAI was great that they gave this space to Lex. Of course, you know, they've been a big influence on so many people looking for alternatives in spirituality and politics. It's still a major influence, I feel, on a sort of underground emerging culture, BAI, even though, you know, the nature of media has changed so much. So, I mean, but what's your hope with this book, Paul, in putting these together, these great interviews, these really timeless interviews? What was your vision for this book?
Well, I wanted to show something of what was happening in the 1970s spiritually. Because it was really an amazing decade. So many of these different teachers came, and they ended up having such a profound influence on our culture. You know, today, you know, in some major cities, we have as many yoga studios as we do Starbucks. And so there was something big that happened, and Lex had so much to do with that. Lex gave a voice to so much of it. And so I wanted to capture that. And of course, maybe as much as anything, I wanted to do it as an homage to Lex, because even though I'd never met Lex, he meant such a great deal to me personally that it just felt like a great privilege and honor to be able to work with his materials.
He was a sort of larger than life character. I remember going to the mosque where he was putting that whole thing together, and he just threw me into a zikr that was happening. He just said, get in there and start moving, you know. and there was like a transmission in that I felt from him in the energy field. And were there a lot of people around him, Sheila, that felt like they were getting transmissions of sort, or that he would give this energy to?
There were a lot of people. And something that he did, which he had sort of an uncanny ability, he would sit down with somebody and ask them a few questions about their life and what they thought about certain things. And then he would recommend teachers or spiritual paths. He would say, well, you know, you really, why don't you look at Buddhism? I think that would be suitable for you. And many, many people followed up on that, and I hear that now and then. People will come to me and say, you know, Lex, just, he introduced me to my teacher. He really had that ability.
Did Lex ultimately have one that he favored more? I mean, you knew him very intimately. Was there, or were they not just one teacher or tradition for Lex? I mean, it's hard to understand where he was coming from, because he was able to absorb so much.
Yeah.
Did you?
I think what he loved and was dedicated to was that search for truth. And when the way it developed in different religions is what he really was attracted to. And of course, Ramakrishna was completely seminal for him. I mean, that was where that idea of finding the truth in all the different religions came to him.
Right. I mean, so, yeah, so, I mean, I think actually I was at his memorial. When was that? And there was a lot of that Ramakrishna energy there, you know, mm-hmm. with the mm-hmm. booklet that woman in Woodstock put together about the, what was her name? She was an assistant, I think, to Lex for a while. What was that?
Cassia.
Oh, Cassia
Berman.
Yes, yes, yes. She kind of put that whole, yes, memorial. Again, she put together that Ramakrishna book. Yes, yes.
No, Cassia. I put together that book that we gave out at the memorial.
Put together. I have that copy
of
that book.
Oh, yeah. I put that together with all the different prayers from different traditions. And, yeah.
Actually, maybe Paul should put that out too, because that was a great book,
yeah.
You know, to put out there. And so, I mean, I think Lex is still influencing people. I mean, now again with this book and these release of the, it's great that you had these shows on tape that now people can listen to. And,
yeah, isn't that lucky? I wish there were more. I mean, the very early ones weren't recorded.
Uh-huh.
But there were 300. There are 330 of them.
I see.
That's funny. The number 3 is recurrent. We have 33 in the book, and there are 330 that exist.
There you go.
That's good.
That's kind of cosmic. So are they going to be more coming out on the website, or are you...
Maybe.
That would be great, because I think these are a treasure. These are a rich treasure of American spirituality, like you were saying, Paul. And these people have gone on to influence millions. The people in these interviews.
Yeah, they really have. And, you know, his book, Coming Home, is still selling. That was the book that he wrote in 78.
What's the book about, Coming Home?
Coming Home was a series of lectures that he gave at the New School. There was a chapter, there's a chapter, 15 chapters, each on different, it's about enlightenment in all different traditions and different teachers.
Mm. Do you feel we've really evolved since that time? That, I mean, at least I feel, and maybe you can also jump in, Paul, that spirituality is much more part of the everyday culture.
I definitely feel that it's, I mean, from a publisher's point of view, spirituality, especially this kind of spirituality, has moved from being a real fringe subject to being mainstream. I've seen that happen over the last 30 years.
In terms of books that are available, I have a friend who in the early days got into Buddhism, and he said there were 3 books on Buddhism that you could read. And they were, you know, they were the really old one, Marco Palace and things like that. What? And now look, it's just their whole aisles in the bookstores that are all Buddhist books.
I mean, that is a great sign. Of course, you wouldn't know it politically, but it's a great sign that people are waking up to this understanding that Lex was so much connected to. I mean,
yeah, I wish it were more a central part of the conversation in the world today.
Right.
I think I don't know. The danger is things become popularized and watered down, and that. Mm. But that always happens. But the fact that there's so much available, that's what's encouraging, isn't it? That people, if they're looking around, they can find it. It's there.
I think even if it's watered down, I mean, which it is, of course, it's still important. It's still an influence that it's there. You know, I think it, at least people are thinking about it, talking about it. There's an awareness. And for me, that shows an evolution that I think Lex is one of the godfathers of this movement.
Yeah. And we, as my friend Paul Gorman says, he says these are perennial truths we're talking about here.
Right. Right.
You know, so they don't change. We change. But people have found these so-called perennial truths, and cultures lose them and find them again and lose them, and so it's this odd human trait that we have of forgetting important things.
Right. I think cultures may lose and find them, but I think once the individual wakes up to the reality that these are true, that there is a truth, then that seems to stay, you know?
Yes, I agree. Once you find it in your life and you realize it, it's not going away.
Right. Right. I mean, Ram Dass says some great stuff about that. He didn't know what all these books in the library were about, all these spiritual traditions, until he had his own experience. Then he really knew what was going on there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it seemed like, though, Lex was awakened to something. Can you talk about that a little bit, Sheila? Like, he knew... I mean, he was looking for it. He also knew the truth of these traditions. He had found, you know, the thing about seeking is that you actually find. Can you describe what do you think he actually found in the discovery of this truth?
Well, you know, when I met him, when he was out of college, he had written... Kierkegaard was his big study in college.
Yeah.
And he had also, he had just written this little book, Socrates and Jesus, comparing them. So I think he just had this mind that gravitated toward these big questions. That really is what interested him. He wasn't interested in small talk or much in politics, or he really went for the big questions. And I don't know if that's something that people are born with or they develop it. I just don't know. But he really had it, and he was reading. He read constantly. He would read when we'd go somewhere in the car. He'd always have a book with him, and if he had to wait, or you know, we got stopped too long in a traffic jam, he would have a book. He would read.
What books do you remember him reading?
Oh, all kinds of things. He read. I was just telling someone the other night, when he was really sick and he was in bed, he read the autobiography of Colin Powell. So he read about people, and then he read everything about Mary Baker Eddy. He knew more about her than a lot of Christian Scientists did. And he read the New Catechism of the Catholic Church when it came out.
What did you say, Paul, in there? I heard.
I think that was just chortling.
Colin Powell. But
yeah, that kind of struck me as funny. But
yeah, and then all the Mexican sorcerer.
Oh, Don Carlos Juan. Castaneda.
Carlos Castaneda. He read all of those too.
I love those books. Those were so well written and brilliant. Well, I'm glad.
Yeah.
No, but it felt to me, just meeting him, maybe I met him once or twice, that he wasn't just seeking, that he actually had come to a place in himself of finding. He found something. He actually had a presence of finding that. It wasn't just seeking. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so he embodied these traditions in a way, you know. So he was also a transmitter of these traditions.
Well, that's what I was going to say. He could write about them very, very clearly. And from what I can see, unless you really understand something very clearly, you can't write it so that someone else can understand it. And he was also a poet. He was a very good poet. So he had, his writing style was really beautiful.
So what do you think now, by putting this out there? Doing this radio show, of course, I think is important. I think it's time people rediscover Lex, or the people who haven't known him, people who did know him, rediscover the value of his work. What do you think, Paul? How do you want to put this work out there in the world?
Well, I think the book is a great introduction to all of these various traditions. There's Sufi teachings in here, there's Jewish teachings, there's Buddhist teachings, there's Christian teachings, New Age teachings. Ram Dass is here, Allen Ginsberg is here, Alan Watts is here, Krishnamurti, the iconoclast, is here. So it's always been my hope that people would read the book and they'd get those transmissions.
Made reference to their own books too. Like we would mention Ram Dass's books and Alan Watts's books and like that. So people can dive deeper if they want to into whatever tradition appeals to them.
Maybe I'll play a little bit of that Ram Dass interview, because I'll just jump in somewhere. I don't know what this part is, but let
me... Now, remember, these are very unedited. The tapes are totally unedited. So
that's okay. I think just it's good for people to just get a feel of it. And we'll just little sections. Let me see what we got here.
See, knowing is a funny word, because knowing usually means an object. But we subjectively know the presence of God, which is not form, thus not knowable as object, okay? In Hinduism, the Brahma, the concept of Brahma, which lies behind all forms, the formless which lies behind all forms. In Buddhism, the closest you would get is the concept of Nirvana, which is no more or less a concept of God than any other one, in terms of the backdrop or the field against which form arises, okay? It could be called pure consciousness. It could be called pure love. It could be called pure energy. It could be called the law, the divine law, as it gets into form, set of lawful relationships. Every one of these is the mind attempting to grasp and conceive of something which is beyond conception. So that my feeling is the personal God or a theistic concept is a method or a vehicle for man to start from where he is and use the rungs of a ladder to climb into a relationship to the beloved in which all of the ways of conceiving become irrelevant. Okay.
It's interesting that in our culture, most, which is Judeo-Christian tradition, is theistic, and so a lot of us who have been turned off by the religion of our culture and are sort of reawakening to spirituality through the East don't like to start with a theistic conception. Many of us might start with a non-theistic conception, and then oddly enough
come back into
a theistic,
because the heart wasn't flowing enough. See, a lot of people move towards very dry techniques that are very non-theistic, and then feel that they're limited because their heart only opens when they're playing with their dog or when they're with their husband or wife, but not in relation to the spirit there. And then they go back into a flow. But see, I differentiate between what I call lower and higher bhakti, or two levels of devotion. One of them is, like in the terms of love, one of them is interpersonal love. I love her, I love him, she loves me, that kind of love. And that's the beginning of devotion. I love God. Does God love me? God loves me. Christ loves me, etc. And then that moves into the higher devotional quality, which is the state of love, the being in love. It's not interpersonal anymore. And that you and God are seen as both existing within love. And God is defined as the love, as statement of love. God, like Christ is called, Christ is love. It's not Christ loves, but Christ is love. And then the interpersonal part is gone. And we meet. It's like when I introduced the program this morning, it's introducing the concept of us living in the spirit together.
That was Ram Dass on the In the Spirit program with Lex Hickson. And you're right. These are perennial teachings. These are still very fresh, these ideas. I think Paul, you have a great vision to put this out at this time, because they're as fresh as they were when they were recorded.
Yeah, they really are amazingly timeless.
And
it's good to have reminders now and then.
Yeah, so, I mean, there'll be this website for people to access. There'll be the book that's published by Monkfish. Can you say a little bit about your publishing company, Monkfish, and these kind of spiritually based books that you are publishing?
Yep. Monkfish is a traditional small press. We publish books that tend to be right at the intersection of spirituality and religion. And we publish, we're an independent press, so we we publish it across all the traditions. Mm. So in a lot of ways, Monkfish is kind of a manifestation, I think, of the sort of universalist vision that Lex had is very much embraced by Monkfish as well.
Well, you know, that's a good point, Sheila. I'm interested in what you have to say. This idea of religion, which Lex was so into, and spirituality, which he was so aware of. How do you think he would make that distinction, or maybe there wasn't for him? What do you think, Sheila?
The distinction between spirituality and religion?
Yes.
He would not make a distinction.
Uh-huh. Because some people do. Some people say they forget it. They let go of the religion, which is the dogma and the ritual and all that, and just exist in relationship to the spirit. But other people say the ritual is a part of that.
Well, for him, the idea of lineage was so critical because this wisdom is the product of hundreds and hundreds of years of people's best thought.
Mm.
So
yeah.
It's something you can't, I don't think you can really invent it on your own. It's there's so much there. There's so much beauty and so much communion there.
I mean, I think that was what was so beautiful about what Lex did and tried to do so often was to pull these religions into the unity. But people have used religions to separate. And I think that's why I think people have let go of some of the religious ideas and gone towards more spirituality. But I guess the way Lex saw it, there wasn't a separation. And that's valuable, I think, for people to understand.
And a lot of the dogmas are accretions. They're things that weren't in the original teachings. So, you know, people just have to go to the heart of it, really find the heart of it. But there's so much beauty in ritual and so much comfort, and it's really connected. I don't know that you can really separate it.
No, I think that's important, especially because of the transmissions and the lineages and the you know, the value of the teachings that can be accumulative if people dive into the inner parts. I guess that's what Lex really did. He went into the inner aspects of these traditions. And if people just hear the superficial level, they could be turned off. But once you go into that deeper realm, like you said, they all lead to the same path.
Yes. And yes.
So do you think Lex found peace at some point? Or was he always looking for more?
I think he found it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I would say he did. And he wanted, some of his frustration would be that he wanted to communicate that, and he wasn't always able to communicate it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Do you
but
think
he did? Yeah. He did a lot of teaching in the Sufi tradition. I mean, they have a huge amount of, they've kept a lot of his talks that he gave.
Oh, I see. At the mosque downtown, the Sheikh Afari Ha.
Yes, yes.
Oh, I see. Huh. Do you think your process of revisiting this has affected you somehow? What has been the result of that for you, this book and this, you know, putting this out there like that?
A wonderful reminder of his brilliance and his boldness to do this radio program. I just loved working on it. Really, I did.
Mm. Well, you were a big part of it, I'm sure, at the time, and you seemed to provide that stability and that groundedness that allowed him to explore and bring that to so many people. I think that's just my feeling. You were a big, you've been a big part of it always.
I hope I was. I would like to think that.
I think so. What do you think, Paul?
Well, I think that we wouldn't have had a book had it not been for Sheila.
Right.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's true. Well, this has been nice. I think I recommend people to get the book, Conversations in the Spirit. It's like the highlights, I would say, of Lex's In the Spirit program on WBAI at Monkfish. Where can people find the book?
They should be able to find their book through their local bookstores.
Oh, great. So like Barnes and Noble and...
Or the local independent or Amazon if they can't, you know, if the local bookstore isn't carrying it. But it's widely distributed.
Because each of these interviews are so refreshing, you know, to hear and to read and to, you know, they give hope. I think it's a very important, especially at this time where people might feel a little hopeless. I think this is a resurgence of the spirit.
Good. And, yes, I think it's a nice cure for the recent political happenings.
Yes.
Me too. I think people will really get an uplift from this from this book.
I do too.
Definitely. Yes, I think it's important. I mean, I was listening to the David Spangler interview. That's really also about transformation, upliftment, and his own journey. And each of these people have a journey and a teaching that are inspirational. You know, and what was it hard for you to decide, Paul, which ones to put in the book or?
No, you know, we were really guided by, Lex had left actually an outline for the book.
Oh, so, that's interesting.
Sheila was very guided by that, and the press was very guided by that as well. And that's his outline is really what formed the core of the book.
Oh, what was his vision for the book in that outline? I mean, what was that about, that outline?
Well, he did it in 1978. So it was the early programs, and he had put them in groups of Buddhism and Islam and Hinduism like that, and Paul had the very brilliant idea to just do it in chronological order. So that's the way the book ended up. So it's not divided into different traditions. So I think that Lex probably would have written something about what he felt about the way each tradition had come in and where it was going, and he would have had a whole commentary to do. But we just decided to present the interviews as they came.
Well, I think in a way that's kind of interesting because it shows his own progression in his own spiritual movement. I mean, it seems like he did these interviews as a seeker, as somebody looking to contribute to his own process, and not as a standard interviewer who's sitting down with this person or that person. That's what I think made In the Spirit so different, that he was a totally different type of interviewer. It was about.
I think you're exactly right. I mean, he did all the research into each person, tried to learn about them, tried to understand what they were teaching. And a lot of it was new, totally new information for him, because he hadn't even finished his doctorate at Columbia. He was still working on that.
Yeah, so in a way, like what you're saying, it was for learning about the guests, but it was also his own process of discovery, these interviews.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, then I think it makes sense to do it in a chronological order, because then you could see his own evolution.
Yeah.
Did you
and
see that?
We didn't have him to do the commentary, so that wouldn't have worked.
Right.
Did you find that in the book, Paul, that in the process of the chronology that Lex was evolving himself?
I don't know if I saw the evolution in Lex as much as I saw the evolution of the decade.
Because
from where I was reading, Lex was pretty enlightened from the very first interview that shows up in the book. And it was clear that he was on his own learning journey, but it was also clear that he'd come to some really deep, profound place.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a,
I agree.
And he was so generous, wasn't he, Sheila? I mean, he had a generous mind.
Yes.
So he just,
So you would say this book encapsulates the progressive spirituality of the 70s? Is that what you're saying it does?
Well, yeah. To me, that's what putting it in chronological order did. There is a sense that the decade gets a little more refined towards the end of the book. And I think the last interview was with Rick Fields, who actually wrote that seminal book, How the Swans Came to the Lake, which is a history of American Buddhism. So somehow it starts off in this kind of very raw place in the early part of the decade, and by the end of the decade, the early 80s, the decade is already reflecting back on itself.
Right. I love that. And circular.
But it also brings the past in with like great figures like Allen Ginsberg from the 50s and the Beats, and then of course Alan Watts, who has that whole early 20th century spirituality that he was kind of pioneer in. So I think it encompasses in a way the whole century of spirituality.
I think it was a seminal show. I think, and Lex was a seminal person, and I think I agree with you. He really caught something of the spirit of the times, and because of the nature of the subject matter, you know, it doesn't go away.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. So, in a way, he was a prophet in his own way. You know, he'd be the perfect person I would love to interview, but this is close because we have all his work here. I mean, a lot of that work and influence. So, well, thank you. I hope this book really goes on to be read by a lot of people and for their own understanding, not just as a way of recognizing Lex, but because these are teachings that everyone can learn something about themselves from, you know?
Yes, I think everyone will find something that they really respond to here.
Great.
Me too.
Well, me, definitely true. So Sheila, what's your next project? Do you have anything that you're working on?
My next project, I don't have anything right now. I'm enjoying my grandchildren.
Okay.
I'm continuing to study with Tibetan Buddhist teachers, Zen teachers.
do you get, what do you find that happens for you with the Buddhist teachings?
I met people in the Buddhist world who I really responded to. I think that has a lot to do with it. You have to find a teacher that you really resonate with.
Right.
And I was lucky enough to have that experience.
And a community too, a sangha.
Yes.
Of people, yeah. So that's great. Good. And what about you, Paul? What's coming up at Monkfish for you?
Well, we have a book coming out in about another month called A Heart of Fire, which is, it actually features one of the people in conversations in the spirit, Zalman Schachter, which these are tales of the early Hasidic masters. And then there's going to be followed up shortly after that by a book called Grassroots Zen, which is really about the Americanization of Zen Buddhism.
Is that a good thing, the Americanization, or is that something that's watered down Zen?
No, I think it's a necessary thing, because what happens is that we got stung, I think, a lot of seekers got stung by the authoritarian nature of Zen. And when it got imported here to America, there was a lot of abuse, unfortunately. There was abuse of power, there was sexual abuse, there were financial improprieties. So I think that this book is, it's not to say that there won't be Zen masters. I hope there'll always be Zen masters. But it's also about applied spirituality. It's spirituality that's rooted in family. It's rooted in day-to-day life. It doesn't find its realization in some otherworldly state, but it finds its fulfillment in social justice, for example, and in good, happy, harmonious relationships.
Great. No, thank you. Thank you. Well, thank you both. Should I end with one of these other interviews? I could play this. Well, there's a lot of... He mixed a lot of music in with the interviews,
yes.
At least the ones on... What was his feeling about music and these conversations, Sheila?
Well, I think that, you know, when you have 2 hours of radio time to fill, it helps just to, you know, make transitions and things like that.
Right. Well, maybe I'll just end with, I was enjoying this David Spangler. Let me just play a little bit of this. Are you guys okay? I mean, I'll wrap up soon.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you so much for inviting us.
It's very exciting for me, because I feel I'm part of that tradition, which in a way initiated me into doing this, listening to Lex, like when I was a teenager on Long Island, and discovering something that was outside the sort of white bread middle class background. There was something else going on, and it was like, really, there's a whole other thing that I never heard of. There were traditions and ideas that, all over BAI, but like Lex, it was a late night program, right? Wasn't it on like at 1 at night? 12?
No. The original one was at 11 o'clock on Sunday.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And then he did have one that was around 8 o'clock at night at one point. But Alan, Lex would be so happy. You were exactly the kind of person he wanted to hear all of this.
Well, thank you for that. And it was really important for me to hear it, because feel like I'm carrying it on in my own way. You know?
That's wonderful. You definitely are.
Yeah, and I brought it out to YouTube, and you know, I feel like there's this tradition we're building on in media, you know, and of course this book is about it, that is building a spiritual understanding in this country that really hasn't existed before. It's like its own manifesting tradition that's happening here. So thank you both. I'll just sign off and say, this is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. I've been talking to Sheila Hickson, the wife of Lex Hickson, who was such a big part of a spiritual foundation in this country. And Lex had a program called In the Spirit, and Paul Cohen, who's on the line, is the publisher of Monkfish, who's just published the collection of Lex's conversations called Conversations in the Spirit. That's Monkfish Publishing, monkfishpublishing.com, and you could find the book there and also on Amazon and in the bookstores. So thank you both again. And yeah, as I listen to Lex, I can feel myself slowing down too a little bit, you know.
Good.
All right. Let me just end with this little David. I don't know what this is, but I'll just see what he has to say here.
A sign of health, actually, and a sign of viability and flexibility to have all these different, even competing species of life. It's a way life protects itself. And I was wondering if Revelation is the same way, if divine life is the same way.
I always come back to the sense that the divine source is essentially inexpressible in its wholeness. And that is true in terms of space and in terms of time. And where it is true in terms of time, it means that there is no cessation to its becomingness, no point where we can say, this is it. We have now encompassed the whole thing. I don't see a pluralistic or a polytheistic situation as much as I see one in which the divine has to express itself. If it's going to express itself through form, but if no one form can embody it, then that which embodies it is relationship. It is the dynamic patterns between forms, the dynamics of structure. And therefore, it needs to have a rich diversity, but a diversity that is in relationship. That's where I don't have a sense of like little petty kingdoms here and there and all these angelic warlords each kind of holding out for its point of view, but rather beings who are experiencing and embodying and perceiving to the best of their ability an aspect of the divine wholeness, which even for them is highly dynamic, and needing and exploring that up to a point within the confines of their own perspective, but then needing to blend that with other beings and other levels, because they themselves, each of us, is in essence this divine wholeness that can never be totally embodied, like the Tao. And that in us, which is that expansive or that essential, reaches out, like I reach out to you. At some point in my development, I have to reach out to you, because I realize that I can't express more of what I am unless we express it together, unless in some way a field is created, a relationship is created that is greater than either of us singly.
Well, that really, I think, that really sums up Lex's whole vision, it feels, doesn't it, Sheila? Doesn't it?
Yes, I love that, yes.
Well, thank you. I mean, I'm just going to keep listening to all this stuff. Thank you again. Thank you, Paul, for having the vision to put this together.
Sure. Thank you, Alan.
Okay. We'll talk. I hope to see you again sometime, Sheila. Thank you.
I hope so too. Good night.
Good night. Good night. I've been talking to Sheila Hickson, the wife of Lex Hickson, who is responsible for all these In the Spirit programs, and Paul Cohen, who's the publisher of Conversations in the Spirit. Ms. Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. If you want to reach me, you can go to my website, newrealities.com. And for the book, go to monkfishpublishing.com or Lex Hickson, that's LexHixon.com. And then /conversations-in-the-spirit. So it's all there, a rich history. Thanks again for listening tonight, and good night.